Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Erin McGinley, and I represent the appellant, Helen Austin. This morning, I'd like to address two reasons why the ALJ's decision denying Mr. Austin Social Security benefits cannot stand. We will rely on our brief for the remainder of our arguments. First, the ALJ's findings are internally inconsistent, and therefore his decision is not supported by substantial evidence. And second, contrary to the defendant's own ruling and to clear law in this circuit, the ALJ did not properly evaluate Mr. Austin's credibility. Turning to the first point, only step five in the five-step process for evaluating disability is at issue here. And at step five, the commissioner has the burden of proof. The ALJ can only use the medical vocational guidelines, or the GRID, to satisfy the commissioner's burden of proving that significant jobs exist in the national economy that Mr. Austin can perform. The ALJ can only use this GRID when a claimant does not have any non-exertional limitations that might reduce the range of work he could perform.
But what evidence was there other than Dr. Taus, who the ALJ specifically says, I'm not going to assign weight to Dr. Taus' opinion, what are you relying on to show that he had these non-exertional limitations otherwise?
Well, Dr. Ferguson would be one example. Dr. Ferguson's a neurological surgeon who examined Mr. Austin. Dr. Ferguson wrote a letter on page 126 in the record saying that Mr. Austin's hand grasp was not as good. And the defendant's own ruling state that limitations on the ability to grasp, to reach and to handle are all non-exertional limitations. So here we have a neurological surgeon saying hand grasp is not as good. Limitations on the ability to grasp is a non-exertional limitation. So therefore, that's inconsistent. And also importantly here, the ALJ himself made a finding. The ALJ made an explicit finding both in the body of his decision and in this finding section that Mr. Austin had decreased use of his right hand and right arm. And again, the defendant's own regulations state that limitations on the ability to grasp, reach, or to handle are non-exertional limitations. So the ALJ's finding that Mr. Austin did not have any non-exertional limitations conflicts with his explicit finding that Mr. Austin was limited in his ability to use his arm.
That was his non-dominant side, right?
That is, but the ALJ's, the defendant's ruling states that the ability to use both hands or, for repetitive hand finger motions required him both sedentary positions. And certainly, reaching handling would require both use of both arms and both hands. And there's other evidence in the record as well. The ALJ, for instance, stated that there's evidence of cervical spondylosis affecting the claimant's hand grasp. The ALJ noted that in his decision. And again, limitations on the ability to grasp are non-exertional limitations, according to the defendant's own rulings. Mr. Austin also testified about the limitations on his ability to grasp. For instance, the ALJ asked him, can you tell me about your ability to grasp or to hold on to things? And Mr. Austin gave an example. He was holding on to an object when both his arms went numb, and it caused him to drop that axe and actually sent him to the hospital. So for all these reasons, we talked about other reasons in our brief as well, including limitations on Mr. Austin's ability to stoop. There is substantial evidence in the record about Mr. Austin's non-exertional limitations. And significantly, the ALJ himself made that explicit finding that Mr. Austin had decreased use of his right hand and right arm. And that conflicts with his finding that Mr. Austin did not have any non-exertional limitations. Therefore, the ALJ's own findings are internally inconsistent, and therefore not supported by substantial evidence. Now, it's important here that the ALJ...
What that would do is take you out of these, out of the medical vocational guidelines.
That's exactly
and then
correct.
get a vocational expert to testify about what's left for him in the national economy, right?
Exactly, and that's exactly where it's headed, Your Honor. Here we have, there's no evidence that the ALJ could use to support his finding that there were jobs in the national economy that Mr. Austin could perform. Can't use the GRID because Mr. Austin had non-exertional limitations. There actually was a vocational expert who testified at this hearing, and the vocational expert said that there were no jobs that Mr. Austin could perform. So therefore, because he can't use the GRID, and the only testimony from the vocational expert that there are no jobs available, there's no valid evidence from which the ALJ could find that Mr. Austin could perform significant jobs in the national economy. The second point I'd like to address this morning is the ALJ's failure to address Mr. Austin's credibility. As this court has repeatedly emphasized, and as defendant's own ruling 96-7P recognizes, the ALJ's decision must contain specific reasons for credibility finding. Must contain specific reasons sufficient to make clear to subsequent reviewers the weight the adjudicator gave the individual statements and the reasons for that late. And here, Mr. Austin testified repeatedly at the hearing about his limitations and about his pain, about what effect that had on him. He talked about his pain and how it affected his ability to stoop. Again, that's a non-exertional limitation. He talked about how it affected his ability to clean. He talked about how it affected his ability to grasp, about his pain and his numbness. But the ALJ's decision doesn't contain any citations to Mr. Austin's testimony. There's no citation whatsoever in the transcript. He makes a cursory statement that he considered the testimony at the hearing. There's no evidence whatsoever of what it was he considered. And the only finding approaching a credibility finding is a one-sentence thing in the findings section that just doesn't come close to any specific reasons for finding a credibility. There's no specific examples of what the ALJ didn't believe, no indication of the weight he gave to Mr. Austin's testimony, if any. No discussion of all these pain medications that Mr. Austin has taken over the years. They tried different medications without success. And another factor for the ALJ to consider, as it recognizes, is the claimant's work history. Here, Mr. Austin had worked steadily for 30 years before he was injured. The one year in that 30 years that he didn't work, he obtained his CED. So here we have a claimant who worked steadily, who took all his pain medication, continually went to the doctor, and testified at length, you know, at his hearing, and told the ALJ about all his limitations and the effects they had on him. But the ALJ doesn't mention this at all in his decision. Doesn't explain at all the weight that he gave, if any, to Mr. Austin's credibility. And the law in the circuit is clear that that's not okay. It must give specific reasons. And that's important here because, like I said, Mr. Austin testified about his limitations. If he accepted his testimony as true about his inability to stoop, limitations on his ability to grasp and to handle, then it's important for a few reasons. First, that would show that there are non-exertional limitations, again giving another reason to take us out of the grid, and leaving us with no valid evidence, again, of why of any job that Mr. Austin could perform. It's also significant because accepting Mr. Austin's limitation is true would mean that he could not perform the full range of sedentary work. And that's another inconsistent finding that the ALJ made here. The ALJ found that Mr. Austin could perform the full range of sedentary work. But the defendant's own ruling state that sedentary work, like I said, involves the ability to use both hands for repetitive hand-finger motions. And if Mr. Austin had these, couldn't grasp, like you said, had this decreased use of his hand and fingers, then he couldn't perform the full range of sedentary work. So it's another inconsistent finding by the ALJ. So again, the ALJ doesn't provide any explanation of how he could perform the full range of sedentary work if he accepted Mr. Austin's testimony as true. Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Finley. Ms. Beverly?
Good morning. May it please the Court. Catherine Beverly. I represent the Commissioner of Social Security. Mr. Austin is arguing that the ALJ should have found that he had non-exertional limitations, and based that argument on the report of Dr. Ferguson, who was one of the neurosurgeons who examined him. However, Dr. Ferguson explicitly stated that the restrictions which would be appropriate for Mr. Austin would be restrictions against heavy lifting, heavy pushing, heavy pulling.
But isn't it true that Dr. Ferguson, in a different part of the report that you say we shouldn't look at, did mention these non-exertional limitations, part one?
He mentioned the fact that Mr. Austin had indicated that he had dropped an axe because his hand grasp was not as good.
Right. Are you contesting that event happened and that he went to the hospital?
No, I'm not contesting that event happened. But what I'm arguing is that Dr. Ferguson was aware of the fact that he had dropped this axe, that he was aware of the fact that he had some hand grasp type limitations, but he did not impose the non-exertional limitations which Mr. Austin is arguing are appropriate.
And what about Mr. Austin's testimony? Is there some reason why that's just automatically rejected in its entirety?
I don't believe that Mr. Austin's testimony was rejected in its entirety.
The ALJ, but his testimony about his non-exertional limitations, trouble stooping, trouble grasping, turning his head around, all these different things.
Well, the ALJ, with respect to the stooping, you know, he discussed the fact that Dr. Tausk had said that there was no bending, no stooping.
Now I'm asking about the testimony, though. Is there some reason why Mr. Austin's own account of his abilities, we don't have any insight into why the ALJ, apart from what these doctors are talking about, chose not to believe Mr. Austin when he said he had these problems?
Well, I do believe that the ALJ indicated that he was basing his finding that he could perform the full range of sedentary work and therefore he would not have any non-exertional limitations based on the objective medical evidence.
But is that a substitute for a discussion of credibility? Is like a blank paragraph what we're asking for if there's discussion of the medical objective testimony? I thought there had to be some discussion of here's the objective testimony, here's what he said, he's talking about things that wouldn't logically flow from the objective findings, or maybe he's talking about things that might flow, but there's a severity issue, or I think he exaggerates, or, you know, we see all kinds of things like that in opinion. The blank paragraph is a little hard to get much out of.
Well, I do believe the ALJ acknowledged that the primary complaints that Mr. Austin had made were with respect to his back and the numbness in his hands. So certainly the ALJ was considering the testimony that Mr. Austin made with respect to those impairments. But he went on to reject that testimony and find that he could perform the full range of sedentary work based on the objective medical evidence, in this case evidence showing that there was no radiculopathy, no myelopathy, the fact that the impairment was in the right non-dominant arm, the fact that he had been able to use his right arm for lifting. In fact, Mr. Austin testified that he could lift 20 pounds at least occasionally.
What about fine? I mean, if his fingers are numb, though, I mean, this is not like a light switch that is either on or off. There might be degrees of impairment which a vocational expert could take into account, but the grid assumes that you're at 100% capacity. That's why it's a convenient thing to use for people who don't have particular impairments. Some fingers might make it hard for you to do small assembly work, which is a sedentary job, for instance. You might not have the ability to feel what you're picking up.
I mean, it certainly could, Your Honor, but in this case, we had several doctors who were aware of these allegations, the fact that he had numbness and problems with his hands, but they did not go on to impose any restrictions other than restrictions on heavy lifting and heavy pushing and pulling. The ALJ's RFC finding for sedentary work, which is a significantly reduced range of work, is consistent with those doctors' opinions. I believe that provides substantial evidence for the ALJ's finding in this case with respect to the...
But there's a distinction between the kinds of restrictions a doctor will put, which are based on the person's medical well-being, and the RFC. And in fact, the commissioner is quick to point out that doctors are not qualified to make an RFC evaluation. That's for the agency to make. And it seems to me a doctor might well say, don't lift more than 20 pounds because it's my evaluation, your back isn't strong enough and you're going to have a problem. I don't know that a doctor would specifically prohibit you from small assembly work or fine motor tasks because it's not going to hurt you in particular. You're just going to drop things. You just won't do it well.
Certainly the doctor is not in a position to make an RFC finding, but I believe that his opinion with respect to functioning would be significant and that it should be considered by the ALJ. And in this case, I mean, there's nothing to suggest that the doctor could not have indicated that he would have difficulty grasping objects or gripping objects.
He might drop an axe on his foot.
He did drop an axe on his foot, but in this case we're asking him to the ALJ, what he found he was capable of doing was sedentary work, which involves only lifting of 10 pounds and smaller items on an occasional basis. So in this case, we do believe that the ALJ did consider the fact that there were some limitations in this area, and he did impose restrictions which would accommodate the limitations of which Mr. Austin was complaining. With respect to the stooping, as I was mentioning earlier, the ALJ explicitly rejected the opinion of Dr. Tausk, who was the only doctor who indicated that he could not perform any stooping or any bending. And so we have the ALJ's consideration of that specific alleged non-exertional limitation, and we know why he rejected that limitation by Dr. Tausk. And finally, with respect to the credibility, The ALJ does discuss, as I mentioned earlier, he did discuss Mr. Austin's primary complaints, and he rejected them because they were inconsistent with the objective medical evidence, as well as the other things that I had mentioned. And those are specific reasons which he provided for making his credibility finding. So while Mr. Austin appears to suggest that the ALJ did not make a credibility finding or did not provide specific reasons, in this case we do have reasons, one of which was the objective medical evidence. The other, the fact that he had returned to work for a 3-month period in a position that was exertionally more demanding than the work that the ALJ found Mr. Austin to be capable of.
And why did he leave?
He left because of his impairments. He said he wasn't able to...
Right. He gave it a try, and he couldn't manage it. So is this a sign of success or failure?
Well, it's certainly a sign of failure on it, in an exertionally more demanding position. But in this case, we're asking him to perform, you know, sedentary work, which would not require...
Right. I thought you were indicating it as a reason to think he could succeed, and I think it's hard to draw that inference from it.
If the court doesn't have any further questions...
Okay, thank you, Ms. Beverly. Ms. McGinley, how much time does she have? 2 minutes?
Thank you, Your Honor. Just briefly, I think that the commissioner in her brief, and again today, is focusing on findings, that on things the ALJ did not find, and that does not comport with the law.
Well, we discussed the medical evidence, and, you know, seemed pretty good by standards of these administrative law judges. I don't know what exactly your problem is. You just want him to write a better opinion, or what?
I want it to be a well-reasoned decision.
Well, he went through. He discussed the various doctors' reports and why he didn't give much weight to TOSC. I don't know quite what more is required. So, you know, it's... So he has some numbness in his right hand, so that's what it amounts to.
And his decreased use of his right hand and right arm, limitations on his ability to grasp, to reach, to handle, to stoop, all these things.
He went through that stuff. He didn't give it as much weight as you do, but I'm not sure what exactly is the clear error here.
Well, this means that he cannot use the grid. For one, he cannot use the grid.
I mean, he went through all this. He decided the only problem he has, well, of course, he's not allowed to, you know, lift heavy weights or anything, but for sedentary work, he's not disabled merely because of this numbness. So it's a judgment. I don't know. It's the same.
Because Mr. Austin had non-exertional limitations, the ALJ could not go to the grid.
Talking about the grid. The administrative law judge went through, evaluated the person's problems, and decided that this numbness would not interfere with his ability to do sedentary work. What more did you want the ALJ to do?
The ALJ improperly found that he did not have non-exertional limitations, and when... Yes, not. I see my time is up. Yes, non-exertional limitations. You can't use the grid, and therefore it's not supported by substantial evidence.
Okay. Well, thank you, McGinley. Thank you to both counsel.